And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, where it's Monday morning, and I wanted to save my trade deadline buzz predictions, whatever podcast, for a little bit closer to the trade deadline, but you can't do that anymore. The NBA is too crazy. Monday morning, you just have to get it out, and by the time this podcast is out, who the hell knows what will happen? Kevin Arnovitz, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well. God, it just makes me smile every time I hear well. Did you watch the Super Bowl?
I did not.
Wow. Wow. You are that much out on American football, huh?
No, it's not a statement. It was just like we were calendarizing, my partner and I. It was like this friend we wanted to see, who wanted to have us over. He's not a football fan. Like we said, let's do it early. And I was like, what? And it, the morning came and it was like, oh, yeah, we got plans. And none of them involve the Super Bowl. So it was just, yeah, it's just one of those things. I'm still traumatized from the Falcons loss. And that's going to be like, it's like a 5-year deal.
Okay.
Right? I've got another 3 years on the contract of my trauma.
I watch one football game a year, and that's the one. I need to read a book about the Patriots or something, because I don't think this is hyperbole. Well, and I say this from a position of almost pure ignorance. What they have been able to do is the greatest accomplishment in the history of American sports to me. Like, the whole sport is designed for this not to happen. I don't even care if they won the Super Bowl last night. They've made 9. Haven't they made like 13 of the last 17 AFC championship games? It's just completely insane. Like, I just don't understand how they're doing this. I don't get it.
This is the parody league, right? This is the parody league. This is the anti-NBA. This is one player can't elevate you. You can't concentrate power for very long. The salary cap structure isn't designed that way. Just in general, the whole game isn't designed that way.
And I say this as an agnostic football fan. I never had a team. I don't care about the Patriots. If anything, I was kind of a 49ers fan growing up because my father was Steve Young's favorite teacher in high school. And my dad was actually the 1994 NFL Teacher of the Year. He got to go to the Pro Bowl because Steve Young nominated him for this award and, like, got introduced at halftime. So I just kind of cheered for Steve Young. Now I don't care. Like, I'm completely agnostic. I just don't understand. Obviously, I guess if there's one position where the great player can't influence everything thing doesn't apply, it's kind of quarterback. But you just shouldn't be able to make, like, 14 AFC championship games and whatever. It just shouldn't be possible. I don't get it.
It's amazing.
It's incredible. I don't want to talk about that anymore, though. That's it. I'm just glad we got a close game. Everyone is crapping on the game, and I guess it was a bad game. All I want is for a close game. That's it. I'd rather have it be 13-3 with suspense than 45-20 with no suspense. Anyway, before we get to our most intriguing trade deadline teams, do you have any leftover thoughts on this absolutely fascinating Kristaps Porzingis trade from last week?
I don't know that they're original. But I don't want to grade the deal until I see what the Knicks do. I mean, one of the things I think we all too often do is sort of examine the effects of the deal, we see the intended effects of the deal, like right at the moment, which is natural, right? And we need to kind of make sense of it and synthesize it. And, like, is this a good deal? Is this a stupid deal for the Knicks? Like, not if they get what they want, but it's a brilliant deal. Is it a stupid deal for the Knicks? Well, if they don't get what they want, it might very well be. So, like, you know, I think that's the question. I mean, do they know more about his medical than the rest of the league? I don't know. So it's just really hard to assess. I mean, I applaud Dallas. They gave up a lot of future assets. But hell, I mean, if you've got Doncic and Porzingis as your linchpins, and they're your assets. Those are your future assets. Very little that you can get out of a first round pick mathematically generally translates into something that valuable. So it's just really hard. Like, I'm kind of, the question is what do the Knicks know that we don't? Which is kind of what you hear around the league. Like, is this a pretext to something really cool for the Knicks, or is this just this completely aspirational thing that will amount to nothing? And this is Charlie Brown of the football.
I'm endlessly fascinated by this. To me, the deal is a bet, and here is the bet: the Knicks were 4 million, 5 million, I don't know the exact number, short of one max contract slot with Porzingis still on the team. That's a Courtney Lee trade, right? So all you got to do is salary dump Courtney Lee. That's going to cost you a first round pick. That is what the Knicks concluded in doing their due diligence on the market for dumping Courtney Lee. They tried to trade him. They in Utah talked about Courtney Lee for Alec Burks, and Utah was like, no, thank you. You know, Alec Burks is on an expiring deal. I don't think a second round pick was going to convince a team like the Jazz to do that. I don't think two was going to. I think it was going to be a first. And the Knicks just like they took it to the wire, couldn't find a way to dump Courtney Lee without supplying a first. So then here's what you do. Dumping Courtney Lee then cost you one first round pick. So you're negative one first round picks. And now you have Kristaps Porzingis and a max contract slot. You get Kevin Durant. Let's just say you get Kevin Durant because that's the name everyone's here. So you have Durant, Porzingis, and, you know, some cap flexibility and stuff, but you're minus one first round pick. Now you have no Porzingis, two max slots, and two first round picks. So you're essentially betting that plus net gain three first round picks and a second max salary slot is better than Porzingis and one max salary slot. And negative one, or the net gain of three picks, as I said before. That's the bet, that the second slot is worth all of that, including getting the picks and losing a great player. Kristaps Porzingis is a great player. I just think that's a fascinating bet, and it says to me, it's not even about KD. Now, it's about KD, and we can talk about that later. It's about the second slot. It says to me that you have to have intel about either who you can get with the second slot or who Durant may or may not want. In a sec, or not who Durant may or may not want. That Durant or player X has told you or mandated to you, or you think he will, that for me to come here, I don't want Porzingis. I want the ability to pick my guy, whoever that is. Now, all of this implies that there's a glorious amount of tampering going on, which of course all over the league, there's tampering going on. But that's an interesting bet to me because Porzingis plus Durant plus, you know, minus one first round pick, you know, you have two great players. No Porzingis plus two max slots plus all these picks, some of which might be good picks, some of which might be bad picks. You know, I don't know. We'll see how good Dallas is. It's just a fascinating wager, right?
Right. No, and you can't, again, it's further evidence. You can't isolate even single trades or even single entities in trades. Like, so let me ask you a question. Would you have traded Porzingis for two first rounders?
Just by
probably
its,
not.
Yeah, sure. No.
In a vacuum, you wouldn't. So your net three, would you have traded Porzingis for three first rounders?
It's hard to conceptualize what all three would be, but let's say two are right. Of the quality, they're all average. Let's say they're all like the 16th pick, right? That's what you're looking at because Dallas is probably going to be pretty good with some downside, but also with some upside. And the second pick is top 10 protected all the way through. And then the third pick is, you know, it's obviously a Knicks pick that now exists and is their property. So it's a bad pick probably, or maybe it's a good pick because they get Durant. I don't know. No, I don't think you trade Kristaps Porzingis right. for three middling first round picks.
Yeah. And Dennis Smith only being incidental, although I think he could still be a very nice player.
Glad you brought that up because I think the league collectively went out on Dennis Smith too fast. And
I agree.
I get why, look, he holds the ball. His decision making is a little bit suspect. Obviously, there may have been some sort of like ego-ish issues, not wanting to, you know, not feeling hurt that the organization moved on to another primary ball handler who, by the way, is like way, way, way better than you and it's not even close and like deal with it. But I still think Dennis Smith has a chance to be a decent NBA player. And of course, the Knicks famously picked Frank Ntilikina over Dennis Smith. And I think after a year and a half of watching both players in the NBA, I think Dennis Smith now stands as the better prospect. Now, Ntilikina is already a good defensive player. Dennis Smith is not really good at anything yet, but Ntilikina is so unconscionably bad on offense through a year and a half. And you want to tell me he's young and he'll grow into it and he shows flashes? That's fine. He like is essentially one of the three or four worst rotation offensive players in the NBA. Like Dennis Smith at least can do some stuff on that end of the floor that intrigues you. So I think he's passing to Ntilikina as a prospect. Now that race will go neck and neck maybe, but I just think that I'm glad you agree. I think the league went out on Dennis Smith too fast.
I like a point guard who kind of relishes drawing contact. And I mean, something I've always admired about Smith's game, even going back to college, is that he's just a guy who will draw contact. His free throw attempt rate doesn't really reflect it too much now, but he's still a profile of a guard I like. I mean, and I agree with you. He holds the ball too long and he's dribble happy. And by the way, that defines, you know, 2/3 of the point guards in this league under the age of 25, if not more. It's just interesting to me because so he goes to dinner with Phil Jackson. Jackson orders the octopus because, you know, as if it's the one's aversion or willingness to try it is a statement of largeness, and he's really grossed out by the octopus, tells the media this. What impact does it have on Jackson? I don't know. Like, if an octopus is delicious, you've been to Croatia, and had Dennis Smith ordered the octopus and enjoyed it boldly with Phil Jackson, would he have already been in New York, Nick?
My in-laws would not have accepted me if I didn't try and like octopus. It would have just been like...
Exactly. You would have been playing for the Mavs and unhappy.
It would have been, please get in this car to the airport. We are not going to see you again if you don't try octopus. Octopus is delicious, by the way.
It's delicious.
It looks gross, and I don't... The one part that cutting into the bulbous head kind of still grosses me out, but it still tastes good. Obviously, look... There are so many human dynamics to this. Like, as you said, what do the Knicks know? Now, it's been obvious for a year now that they know they at least have a chance at Durant. Now, what kind of chance that is depends on who you talk to, and I'm not going to sit here and reconstruct all the third and fourth hand buzz that's floating around the league. They know they have a chance. That's all. It may be a good chance, maybe okay chance, maybe slim chance. I don't know.
There's a stat I want and will never get because it involves going deep into the heads of free agents. It would be very cool to have information, data, whatever, of the last 10 years. I want to know the moment these guys make the decision. And they'll never tell you. And you know, decision-making isn't a binary thing. But I'd like to know the moment Durant knew he was going to the Warriors. And maybe it's by stage. Maybe there's the moment you know you're not coming back. Let's say if you leave a team. And then the moment you know you're going there. And I just, it's something guys all season as pro forma, as they probably should, say, hey, I'll worry about that on July 1. Get back to me on July 1. Speak to me on July 1. You and I know that many of these guys make their decisions well in advance. Some tip their hands, or at least they decide stay or go, and then that second part of the decision tree on go, coming out of there like the five places maybe they will go, and then they choose that. It would be, how valuable, if you were an NBA GM of a high-profile destination team, how much would you want that information? Just knowing when guys actually make their decisions. Because, like, that's something for all the proximity we have to them on Twitter, Instagram, and these reports 24 hours a day, and the intel of so many of the top news reporters in the league. Do we know when exactly the median superstar makes his decision? And that's what's interesting to me. Like, just when does that happen? It's the most valuable information, and yet none of us really has it.
Well, that's what makes this particular summer so interesting. I had a GM tell me this over lunch a month and a half ago. He said, you know, just a warning. When you're reading the tea leaves and doing all this, just look at who all the big free agents are. They're all on top-level playoff teams, and no matter what they say or do, in the interim between this lunch and July 1, just remember, the playoffs are going to have a massive impact on what's going to happen on July 1, and it makes the playoffs triply interesting because you have Kawhi, Kyrie, and we could talk about Kyrie and everything that happened over the weekend if you want, Jimmy Butler, KD, over and over. These guys are all on playoff teams who, I mean, if a flame out by the Celtics in the first, just say the Celtics just, first round seems unlikely now that, Indiana is not as threatening anymore, but let's say they get rolled 4-1 in the second round. It's possible, depending on what the matchup is, if they get rolled. Like, that's a crisis. That's an organizational crisis, right? I mean, it's going to be fascinating.
Right. And that's why I've always, you know, now that the Kyrie thing has moved back from, you know, certainty in Boston to, well, maybe, is that anybody trying to glean what happened, it's completely variable based on Celtic performance in some part, right? I mean, we can talk about, well, if maybe his teammates don't like him as much, or he's tried this leader thing and it doesn't work, or there's just something about the flavor and texture of Boston that he doesn't care for. If they're playing in an NBA Finals, it is decisively different than, as you say, like a second round loss, which again for these top four teams is entirely possible in the East. And I apologize to Pacer fans. I'm factoring in Oladipo's absence, but again, the information we need to make these determinations does not exist. It's entirely April, May, and early June,
and
that's
And on Kyrie, I mean, I have never had anything like what happened on Thursday night with any player anywhere. And Windhorst, and I chipped in a tiny bit, wrote a piece about how Kyrie was suddenly at the center of everything, of Anthony Davis, of free agency, of the Knicks, of KD. Kyrie's all of a sudden at the center of it. This is before the shoot-around media availability on Friday when he said, ask me on July 1, and the 9,000 other things you could parse in a million ways. The amount of buzz from people in the league about Kyrie the minute the Knicks opened that second slot, I mean, I have never experienced anything like it, because it was, hey, I've heard the Clippers are going to trade for Kyrie. Kyrie's out. I've heard this team's involved. Have you heard that the Celtics are in trade talks with the Clippers? The Clippers just kept coming up with people. Kyrie's, have you heard the Celtics are going to trade Kyrie? Like, I've heard it's imminent. Like, people who normally know stuff and are normally, I would consider, reliable were texting me this stuff. And according to all the principals involved, it was like wildly inaccurate. Like, just wildly, like the Celtics were not trading Kyrie. There were no trade talks with the Clippers. Like, nothing was actually happening. But, and that was, I will always remember that night, sitting in a hotel in Cleveland of all places with no game in Cleveland, no front office people in Cleveland for me to hang out with because they're all out of town scouting. It's minus 10 degrees and digesting all this information. And it will always be my reminder of like the echo chamber in the NBA can get so frothy and sometimes so off. Now, obviously there's some base level of reason why this Kyrie buzz is out there, and then it was amplified the next day. But not that I've been covering the league for 20 years, I'm in like year 9 or something, but I've never had anything like the level of Kyrie panic, crazed, what is going on buzz. It was insane, and you know, we'll see what happens. But to your general point, like, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. I don't think Kyrie knows. I think the playoffs will be very, very telling. And I don't remember anything like this Anthony Davis situation, which has tentacles touching so many teams and so many players. And obviously the Celtics want a chance to go get Anthony Davis. And, the leverage plays are just fascinating. Like, the Lakers see the Kyrie uncertainty, which Kyrie then verbalizes on Friday, and their leverage play with the Pelicans is, hey, if the Celtics fall away as an option and they're not there on July 1, you're not getting anything better than what this offer is that's on the table right now. And we may not even throw everything else in because I don't know where else you're going to trade them. If the Celtics fall away because Kyrie may be leaving, is leaving, has telegraphed that he's leaving, like, okay, you'll come back to us then. And it's just, I just can't, the AD thing is insane. It's just crazy.
Well, and the kind of, I was sort of asking the question the other day to some folks, and given that, given this new dynamic, given the lack of certainty that Boston, I say lack of certainty, that Boston can come up in July, essentially be able to offer AD to play alongside Kyrie because he's staying, let's just say, and all the other assets that they can offer New Orleans. Given that, it made me wonder, will other teams, unlikely teams, unsuspecting teams, teams that might not even have a great shot at retaining AD, get into the action this week under the premise that, look, we can go make this acquisition. Again, I threw out in a scenario like Chicago, and I'm just with no intel. I'm using them as an example. They can offer a nice package, right? If you're New Orleans, young players, picks that are going to be low, et cetera, et cetera. You give it a try. And if it is evident, even if you know immediately, like in the first 3 months, the guy moves into the place and the relationship just fails. It's awful. Well, then you become the team that can deal on July 1. You can be the team that trades Davis. You can get all the assets that would be coming to New Orleans, whether it's from Boston or the Lakers or whoever. So, like, why not take a stab? If the worst thing that happens is you give away your young assets to get AD, he doesn't want to be there. And by the way, this you don't have to do it on July 1. You could do it at the deadline next year. Probably get a little less because, you know, you don't offer as much AD on this remaining deal. But it just makes me wonder if this week – there's a little more aggressiveness from what we call the mystery teams, knowing that if you get Davis, look, even if it doesn't work out, you still have time. That was one thing that, you know, kind of Rich Paul and gang did, is they moved up the timeline so early that literally this could become an asset you flip like some house in Southern California.
I am so thrilled you brought this up, because I've had two teams, yeah. I've had people on two teams pitch me the idea, or let's bat around the idea of, should we trade for AD even if we know we have zero chance to re-sign him? Should we do it anyway, because what we get back on July 1 will be better than what we send out now?
Exactly. This is the principle.
And I mean, these are teams where, like, we don't even, like, we know we can't keep him. Like, it's just 0% chance. And
just play some arbitrage.
And, exactly. And so my response is the same as essentially what I just said, is A, I think that sounds like that's a more theoretically interesting play than a real life interesting play. It's slightly dependent on the team, but, like, again, like, these guys are human beings, and to throw your whole organization into such turmoil to essentially turn over your roster two times in X amount of months is like, that's like organizational trauma of some kind that has a human cost that I think, as we imagine these things in theoretical transaction world, is not always properly calculated. Number two, the Boston thing falling away applies here too, because if Boston falls away, the idea of doing this is that Boston is going to be sitting there with the Godfather offer on July 1, and you can play Boston and the Lakers and maybe another team off of each other. If that Godfather offer falls away, then it's certain, then I don't think it's worth it at all to try and do the, as you called it, do the arbitrage of this. It's interesting, though, that you bring it up.
Yeah, but you're right. You make a good point, which is that the basis of getting in the action is, hey, Boston's no longer a certainty. Well, that also suggests that the market on July 1 isn't as frothy as it is now. And so what you're banking on is, again, it's taking away human considerations. And I'm with you. Like, I wouldn't trade, you know, unless I had some real certainty or a great probability that Davis would say, and I'm using Chicago again, it's just an example, that there's no loaded case study here. It's just, I don't know that I would trade Markkanen or Carter. These are two players I really like a lot, and Chicago really likes a lot. Because then, hey, he's gone. Okay, great. Now you've got Jaylen Brown, even Jason Tatum, whatever it was, whatever it might be. It's just, it's still, now you essentially have had three identities in 6 months. And that's a little bit extreme. It's extreme for your fan base. It's extreme for your culture. It's extreme for your staff. It's just extreme. So that would be, yeah, you're right, the case against it.
Here's the Celtics situation in a nutshell. And this is a little black and white, but this is, I think, what a team like the Lakers would be counting on. It's like, you can't make the Godfather offer. You can't make it now. You can't make it at the draft. You can't make it whenever without a commitment from Kyrie. You cannot put everything in the bag without a commitment from Kyrie. But you can't get a commitment from Kyrie. Maybe. This is all theoretical. Maybe. You can't get a commitment from Kyrie without getting Anthony Davis on your team first. And so you're caught between these two realities. Now, obviously, you can, there's a lot of middle ground there where, you know, you can get a commitment from Kyrie if you get AD and sort of talk it out and all that and arrange it and, you know, time the transactions right. But that's the sort of basic reality, whether it exists or not, that the Lakers are counting. It's just the leverage, the leverage plays, the tentacles of this are everywhere. Around the whole league. It's just, I don't remember anything like it, but that's not what we were supposed to talk about. Listen up, people. We have a big favor to ask, and we promise it won't take up too much of your very valuable time. Our show is supported by some fantastic sponsors. You know that, right? Well, we'd love to hear your feedback. Head to podcastlisteners.com and fill out a short anonymous survey. That's it. We swear, nothing else. Again, that's podcastlisteners.com. There's two trade deadlines going on. There's this, and then there's like all these other teams doing like normal trade deadline stuff. Like, oh, we got Rodney Hood for 2 second round picks and some other stuff. Like, it's just like two separate NBAs. So the goal of this podcast was, let's pick our three most intriguing trade deadline teams as we do our five most confusing teams before the season and yada, yada, yada. Kevin Arnovitz, I will let you lead. Who is your, pick any of your three or your most intriguing or whoever. Who's your intriguing trade deadline team as we are 72 hours out?
All right. In no particular order, but one of mine is the Sacramento Kings. And the reason is, all right, so there are three ways you can acquire a star, right? Free agency, the draft, and the trade. It's sort of GMing 101. I mean, I should say there's probably a fourth, which is, you know, paying non-star money to a star and then calling him a star. So that's number four. But let's just, for the sake of this exercise, it's the first three. And, you know, I think, and for a lot of teams, the truth of the matter is something we don't talk about a lot is that for basically 25, 24 teams in the league, most cases, number two is off limits. You can't, or number one is off limits. They can't acquire a star in free agency. It just doesn't happen. And the GMs of these teams are always eager to remind us of this, that they are just at a certain disadvantage. Their market is not a destination. They don't have the capacity. They have to either draft guys and groom them into stars, or they have to trade for them. And so I think with Sacramento, if they're ever going, they've got guys now that are slated to become stars. I mean, De'Aaron Fox is fantastic. Bagley looks like a really nice player. We'll see. They have some really interesting young players that are going to be very, very productive, and some already are. I mean, we forget this is a team that is above 500 on February 4th in the West. But, you know, now would be a time where, hey, can we add another impact piece? And boy, what would we have then? And so I'm curious to see Sacramento, they're one of the few teams with cap space. They have really valuable expiring deals. They have Shump. They've got Zach Randolph. They don't know he's not expiring. They don't know, you know, necessarily what the future is for Willie Cauley-Stein, given that they have bigs. And by the way, if you've not watched Harry Giles, like, work out of the high post and pass the basketball and do all kinds of skilled big man things, Zach, like, I am on the Harry Giles.
I'm track. Becoming a believer in the Bagley-Giles front court.
I love it. And so, but they've never had a three. And I think we overvalue the distinction between two and three these days. I think, you know, two wings. But do they get in on, do they look at Harrison Barnes, particularly if Barnes, you know, he's got 1 year option. I don't know if you're, are you Barnes, do you pick up the 25? There's a lot of money out there. I mean, you're Harrison Barnes, and in average year, you might not get your 25, but do you pick it up? That's a question, and obviously one that would impact any trade. You know, Otto Porter is another guy. My best intel is he's not nearly as available as he's been made out to be, or at least for a reasonable price. But do you now get a max guy, bring him in, and, you know, a guy who's got years left, who's still relatively young, and make that a key piece of your future, knowing that you can have all the cap space in the world in Sacramento in any given year? You're not going to get those guys voluntarily. But you can. You've got a better culture. You've got a team that's interesting, great young players. You know, bring in a guy who's of that ilk. You've got the money, and just acquire it that way. And that's what I'm watching with Sacramento. Yeah, and they'll probably get in on the action. They've got, you know, some smaller deals, and they've got expirings. They've got things teams want, to say nothing of space. And so, but they're an interesting team to me for this reason.
If they did nothing, I would be absolutely blown away, if only because they are the only team with cap space of any meaningful amount. And so they will, at the very least, act as a third-team facilitator by taking on some money. Barnes is really interesting because, as you said, he has this player option. I wrote this on Friday night that the Mavs, I think, are slated to have about $10 million in cap room if Barnes and Dwight Powell are on the team and pick up their options, and Powell obviously will. Barnes is a more interesting case we could talk about. If they were to – now, in the one, once Doncic and Porzingis are both on big contracts, they're going to have just limited windows to get into free agency, although that the cap at some point is going to go up maybe more than expected because of the gambling money, no one really knows, etc. But dealing Barnes now somehow and opening up more cap space gets you another window to sort of play that game if you want to, and I'm not sure they view him as part of the long-term picture there. The player option is really interesting because a number of people mentioned to me before the season that, you know, if a guy like, let's say, Al Horford or Goran Dragic or Jeff Teague or all these guys with player options is on a team that's in tax hell or cap prison, you know, needs cap room or whatever, they could say, hey, look, I'll do you a favor. I'll opt out of 25. Okay, so that's off your books. If you re-sign me, for 4 years, $100 million, or four years, $80 million, something like that, where I'm $5 million lower as a cap hit in this particular year where you urgently need that $5 million is like some sort of urgent need for you. But I get taken care of long term. I'm just not sure the Mavs and or the Kings are going to be in a position where that matters to them. And in that case, you just might opt in.
Right. And so now if you're Sacramento, you're guaranteed Barnes for a season and a half. You know, you have his rights. You get a look, and that's sort of the question. And I think he'd be an interesting fit there.
I think he would too. You can play him at the four with Bogdanovich at the three and Fox and Hield, and you could play him at the three. I mean, when people say three, oh, we need a three. I mean, if you look by the numbers, the Kings have been outstanding with Fox, Hield, and Bogdanovich as the nominal three. Like, they've been outstanding. They don't appear to need a three. What people are really saying is, you need a big, big wing. Like, at some point, if we're going to get serious in the playoffs, we're going to run into KD or Kawhi or one of these guys where you just need. It was like the Joe Johnson problem in Toronto. Like, we're just going to need a guy who's big enough to deal with this and rangy enough to deal with this, even if the numbers say we're fine otherwise, right? I mean, that's what we're talking about.
Well, yeah, and when I was in Sacramento, because I was having this conversation with someone in Sacramento, and I said, you kind of have your three. You know, Bogdanovich, like, that trio is just, I mean, it's lethal. And, you know, I propose, you know, after the conversation, that we rename the small forward position in the NBA to who's going to guard Durant. Because that's all we're talking about.
Perfect.
Who's going to call Durant is really what teams want, and there's this fear of having a three-guard offense in certain situations, exactly what you said. I mean, that is, like, that's the beef. That's why Shumpert's on the floor, because he's the only guy who provides physicality in a conventional sense, you know, in the imagination of the Kings. I think it's overvalued a little bit, but you can't argue with what you said, which is, you know, now you've are you prepared to go to war with Bogdan Bogdanovich guarding Kevin Durant or another oversized three? And that's, you know, therein lies the problem. With Barnes, you're a little more comfortable.
You know who's just, I mean, everyone knows I love Paul George. That guy is shooting. Oh, if you put a smaller guy on him now, he's just like, he has quietly become a good step back, sidestep 3-point shooter in his own right. Like, he's just, if you put a smaller dude on him, like against the Celtics yesterday, they had Marcus Smart on him. Now, Marcus Smart is a fire hydrant, but he's not as tall is Paul George, or like whoever else. Like, if he got Kyrie on him on a sweat, he's just shooting over dudes with such ease that it's just, and he's routinely putting up these 35-point games. He's having an incredible season. That's an aside. The Kings.
No, so, and it's why guys like Robert Covington are really valuable, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've gotten to the point where, though, we've kind of leveled the distinction between twos and threes or threes and fours, that at the end of the day, you need size on certain nights against certain guys. And the interesting thing is, it's not that often. You can coast through the regular season playing a three-man who's 6'4", 6'5", and you can probably, it will not have impact 80% of the time. You know, there may only be, I mean, literally like 14 games on the schedule where this is an issue. But damn, if that 14th game is on May 15th, you're screwed.
That's the 82-game players and 16-game players. That's going to be one of Draymond's all-time contributions to the NBA, is that piece of lexicon. It was never verbalized so well as when he said there are 82-game players and there are 16-game players. We got a bunch of those, and a lot of teams don't have a bunch of those. And it's really perfect. It's not as good as Ball Don't Lie, which is Sheed's contribution to the lexicon. People, here's a quick and free way to finally stick to your New Year's resolutions if you stop going to the gym and all that. Start listening to podcasts on Spotify with more than 150,000 podcasts, including Oprah's Super Soul Conversations, The Tim Ferriss Show, Happier with Gretchen Rubin, The Nutrition Diva. I could use that one, honestly. And also The Low Post and a lot of other ESPN podcasts. You can learn how to balance a budget, balance a diet, how to feel balanced while meditating. Balance is very important. All podcasts on Spotify are free. And you can even download episodes for those times when you've gone off the grid, you know, to get all of that newfound balance into your life. So start the year off right with podcasts on Spotify. Last thing on the Kings, the scuttlebutt is that they're being very protective of their cap space, even just next season, but that they would cannibalize some of it for a good player. Like, they're not going to be that greedy about it. And I think Harrison Barnes is a good enough player that they would cannibalize some of it for him. Otto Porter, obviously, as you said, would be such a player. I don't think the Wizards have made him really available.
He's not available in any real sense.
Give me trade deadline intriguing team number two on the Arnovitz list.
Oh, we're not alternating. Okay.
No, I'm just going to let you go.
The Clippers.
Ooh, not on my list. Go. Tell me why.
The Clippers are in a really interesting situation, right? So they're fighting for the eight. I don't think many of us have them in the playoff field. They've been a nice overachievement story. You know, and you know, they're nice. They look like crap against Atlanta the other night at home. They lost. And they're nice. They're really exciting and interesting. And we all enjoy the development of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And they got guys who just kind of buy in. It's a likable team. Great. So if you get the number eight seed, you are treated to a round trip ticket to San Francisco, which is lovely, Naples. and you're gonna get your asses kicked. And that's great. And oh, by the way, you'll lose your pick. You've demonstrated some good taste in the upper middle or at the bottom of the lottery. You were able to finagle Gilgeous-Alexander. I'm not saying you don't want to make the playoff, but on top of that, Steve Ballmer is not an owner, you know, unlike the folks in Orlando, who would really love to see $3 million in revenue out of two home games and kind of get people excited again about basketball experience in their city. They should care about that. You also have kind of a great confluence of an asset, which is you have an expiring deal, but one for a very good contributing player in Tobias Harris. And you also have a situation where it is a seller's market. There are a lot of teams who still think they're in this race who want help. So my question is, buy, sell, or hold? And, you know, the Clippers won't do much of anything. They're going to be pretty quiet. Well, why? I mean, because here's the thing. Unless your plan is to re-sign Tobias, if that's the case, you don't want to part with him. You don't want to lose his rights. I mean, this is a bird you want to have in hand. And if that's the case, great. Then you're committed to Tobias Harris. I'm not a huge Harris guy. Like, he's had a great season. I like the player. I think he's a good, and I don't tend to like speaking this language very often. He's a good number three option. I don't really kind of buy the option thing. But if he's not, if the thing is you're going big game hunting and it's Kawhi and KD and now if Kyrie's in play and all this other stuff, and there are other teams, say, that, you know, whether it's the Brooklyn Nets or the Utah Jazz, who have designs on Harris and are going to be on his doorstep at July 1, like, why go play in the market? I mean, what? So you suffer the indignity of having your best player leave after you've made him central to your campaign, and for the last 8 weeks of the season, you're without his services. You float back down to 10th place. And, by the way, for him, you probably get some nice assets because he actually is a guy who could go. You know, he's not we'll take your expiring Amon Shumpert, Zach Randolph. I mean, Tobias Harris can help a very good team a great deal right now. And I just think the same thing with Pat Beverly on a smaller scale, right? Like, another guy they have who, you're telling me you can have one of the best point guard on ball defenders in the league who also shoots with good proficiency from three, and it's just a bulldog. I'll talk about a 16-game player, you know, like Pat Beverly. And so that's the question for me is, all, you know, what are the Clippers going to do at the deadline? I'd be sellers and then get back in the draft.
I 100% agree with you. I've been saying it all year. In my little trade buzz thing on Friday at the very end, I said, I still think the Clippers should at least see what they could get from one of their veterans, blah, blah, blah. 100% they should be sellers. They're deep enough they can trade one of these guys without hurting their current team if they really want to stay in the eighth seed all the way through, with the exception of Harris. Harris, to me, I said this last week, one of the more intriguing ways to frame this deadline talking to people around the league was, who's maybe gettable that we don't necessarily think is gettable? Like, we know all the seller guys who are out there. And Tobias Harris was a theoretical answer, not based on intel, a theoretical answer people outside the Clippers would give a lot of, like, would they do it? He's expiring. He's good. The right team that needs him now would also value his bird rights to re-sign him and view him almost as a free agency acquisition. You know, he may not be a part of your long term plans if you need the two max slots and you can't dump Gallo, who is hurt again, a thing that has hurt the Clippers lately. Who knows? Again, everything could change in the next 72 hours. Teams have definitely called him about Tobias. My sense is that the Clippers have shut it down, and one of the reasons they've shut it down is they view him as a nice plan B. Like, if we don't get both guys or one, whatever, like, we'll re-sign him. We're confident he's going to have value. He's only like 20. He's like preposterously young given how long he's been in the league.
I know. I mean, I feel like the guy should be 34 years old. You look at his,
I think he's 26, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's still really young. I mean, that's the thing, Zach, is look, if he's your plan B, I get it. I just wonder about timing, and in terms of just that free agency week. I mean, if you have intel early on, like the cavalry's not coming, you've got an opportunity. But I just feel like there are teams that have done a good job in free agency of sort of being there early, you know. And I just I wonder, is he an auto re-sign? Is Tobias like, yeah, go out and see if you can get these players who are better than me, and if you can't, I'll be your consolation prize. Absolutely, that's what they're saying.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I don't
and
think
it's... if that's where the money is, then he'll be happily a consolation prize, right? I mean, but I think there might be suitors for him.
There will be suitors. I mentioned Utah on Friday. Utah would 100% be a suitor for him. There would be suitors all over the league for a four who can shoot threes and break people down off the dribble. Now he's playing kind of a 3.5 this year. Now he's their starting four with Gallo hurt, but I think teams will view him mostly as a four, and a big wing in the case that you need to sort of juggle the matchups that way. Look, maybe the plan B thing is a bluff. Maybe it's not real. Maybe that's the Clippers posturing in the market to try and juice up the offers they can get for him. I don't know. You never know this time of year. The other dilemma for them is, like, all of these guys we're talking about, like, they're not going to get anything good for Avery Bradley. I don't think you get a first for Patrick Beverley. I think the Rodney Hood 2 seconds
is now the standard.
That's going to, like, I think that's what Orlando's going to run into with Terrence Ross, is I don't think they're going to get a first for Terrence Ross on an expiring. I just don't. Maybe they'll impress me and do it. I don't think they'll even get, like, a fake first. I think it would be 2 seconds. I think we get 2 good seconds. Like, Memphis gave up 2 good seconds for Justin Holiday, who's not as good as Terrence Ross. I don't see a first. Maybe Orlando will prove me wrong. It's totally possible. I don't see a first. Same for Beverly. And in that case, is it really worth it? The one guy who you could 100% get a first for is Lou Williams. 100%. They'd get a good first for Lou Williams. Unprotected first for Lou Williams. I think so. Because he's
such a good deal.
Because he's good, and he's on this crazy good contract where it's $8 million this year, $8 million next year, $8 million non-guaranteed in 2021. It's a crazy contract. Brilliant extension that the Clips signed him to. And if he wanted to lock in the money because he liked it there, good for him. The Blake Griffin trade telegraphs it, like, I don't care how prominently you're featured in our marketing. I don't care about anything. Like, we'll trade you. For a good deal, we'll trade you. That's the guy. But that's the one that really hurts their team. He is super valuable to their team. They are not in the playoff race without him. It's going to cost you a win or two to trade him for future assets now. So I don't necessarily see a deal in that Lou, Avery, Beverly, nexus of sort of decent veterans on semi-expiring, because Bradley's not guaranteed for next year mostly, contracts. And that brings you back to Tobias. My gut is that we don't see any of these move because the price just won't be right. But I agree with you. I would 100% try if I were them.
But I might take a couple of seconds for Beverly. And so far as, Gilgeous Alexander is obviously your future. Maybe Beverly's part of the future. I don't get the sense that there's... Yeah, that's any sort of certainty or even probability, but it's still picks, at a time when, again, I'm not saying you don't want to make the playoffs. It's always nice to make the playoffs, but the playoffs cost you a real asset. I mean, is making the playoffs worth the number 12 or 13?
Well, what you're alluding to for people who don't know all the pick stuff by heart is that Celtics get the Clippers pick lottery protected, so the Clippers keep it if they miss the playoffs.
And that's real. It's a real asset. For what? And I, you know, a team can never express that in any sort of way. I mean, I think that I would imagine it's a finable thing. I mean, I don't think Lawrence Frank could come out on February 7th and say, yeah, our feeling was, you know, we love these guys, but hey, you know, the truth is we have no interest in the eighth seed. You know, I mean, obviously a team can't say that, but anyway, it's an interesting calculus they have, and that's why they're one of my three teams.
If LeBron is playing every game for the rest of the season, or every game but three, if this sitting out the Warriors game does not portend a pattern of sitting out regularly, then I think the odds are against the Clippers making the playoffs and holding on to the number eight seed, because I don't see them passing Houston or Utah, or, you know, the Spurs have been pretty damn good for the last 6 weeks. Like, I don't see any of those teams falling out. So to me, if LeBron, the Lakers are one game out in the loss column of the Clippers, the Kings are sandwiched right between them. That win the other night in overtime in the Lakers-Clippers game, the Lakers win was like a kind of a big win. And
huge win.
Yeah, and so I think if you think LeBron's playing the rest of the season, I think you have to view the Clippers as less than 50-50 for sure to get into the playoffs. Listeners, you know, I like anything that can save me time in this crazy busy world we all inhabit. Getting tickets online used to be a time suck. Oh my God, there's 100 sites on the secondary market. Did I check them all? Oh, I forgot to check that one. Am I getting a bad deal? Did I get the best deal? All of a sudden, 2 hours have been vaporized out of my life that I did not have. Now, that is why SeatGeek is the way to go. It solves all those problems. It pulls millions of tickets from all those places into one place, one click. That's it. So you can easily find the seats you want for the price you're willing to pay. It's super easy to use. It has a color-coded, user-friendly system. Green dots for good deals, red dots for less good deals. It's easy to see where the seats are, toggle between dates, all of that. It's designed to make your life easier. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. It should be your go-to ticket source for everything: sports, concerts, comedy, Broadway, whatever you want. Best of all, my listeners, you wonderful people, get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do, download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code LOWE, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast. That's promo code LOWE for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event, and we have the tickets. Who is your third team? Because I will determine which team we're going to talk about depending on who the team is.
Houston Rockets.
Okay, we're not going to talk. We'll talk about them later. Can we talk about Orlando? Because Orlando is the team on my list that I
we'll
want to talk
about. Orlando.
We just alluded to Terrence Ross now. I think he's for sure available. Whether they get the asset they want, because they'll say, you know, he's been our best player off the bench all year. He's shooting in the high 30s from three on a lot of attempts. He's a kind of player that every team needs, you know, a shooter who moves around a lot, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if they'll get the price. They're sitting here with Nikola Vucevic, an all-star, deserving, on an expiring contract, which obviously means you have two choices. You lose him for nothing, or you pay him a lot. Because he's going into the market at the exact right time, 28 years old, in his prime. Someone is going to pay him a lot of money. It only takes one. And even in a league where centers are allegedly, they're overstocked with centers and this and that, what he can do as a shooter and a passer makes him special for his position despite his defensive limitations. He's going to get paid. And also, I think the lesson of a lot of these, a lot of contracts is, you know, like look at the Drew Holiday contract or the Kyle Lowry contract, or you could pick a lot. Even when there doesn't appear to be a robust market for a very good player, even when there may not even be one other suitor left who's going to pay Drew Holiday or Kyle Lowry or player X to 25, 30, whatever the big number is, like teams still kind of take care of their own guys. Like you still pay Kyle Lowry 3 years, $100 million because
right.
He's Kyle Lowry.
That was like, always interesting to me, is the Lowry thing, right? Like he didn't really have any other suitors at that level. He just didn't. And Toronto took care of him.
Yeah, so I've said to people, like, is it possible they could get Vooch back at 15 a year? And the intel coming back to me is you're being a little bit naive. Like that's just and truthfully, as I just outlined the history of a lot of these contracts.
Well,
let me
counter that. And then, granted, I've always subscribed to all it takes is one, but he's a big man in a market that has demonstrated, and I know there's a lot more money out there, in a market that's demonstrated that big men just aren't as coveted as they used to. It is now being perceived as a mercenary position. You can go get a big at a reasonable price. It does not need to be on a long-term deal. It does not need to be on a heavy deal. And, yes, this guy can score the ball. But are you going to give a center who has defensive liabilities, who will start, will turn 29 the second week of the season for his 29th, 30th, 31, and 32nd year on this planet. Are you going to make him a cornerstone? Are you going to let him eat up just under a quarter of your cap space, or for that matter, a fifth of your cap space, let's say? Still 20% of your cap space.
I think it'll be, it could be, you could argue.
You and I did our love letter to Vooch last time.
You could argue it's going to be less than that. I mean, is the cap's 109 next year, projected 118 the year after, it could be 125. Like, if you get a guy at 20 a year, that could become 1/7 of the cap by the time that contract is in its middle years. You know what I mean? It really could be.
20 million ain't what it used to be. You're right.
So they got Vooch, and, to me, I'll just never stop beating the Aaron Gordon is an important trade chip in the NBA drum until he's actually traded. Aaron Gordon makes 21.6 this year, 19.9 next year, 18.1 the year after, 16.4. Remember what I just said about in 21-22?
Yeah.
What the cap is going to be, possibly $16 million of the cap is going to be. If Aaron Gordon develops, he's only 23, I think. You know, that 16.5 is going to be a very good contract, which maybe mitigates against trading him now. His trade value is only going to increase if he gets good in that. And by the way, without Gordon and Vucevic, the Magic are like, with replacement level players in their places, the Magic are, or with the Magic's replacements in their places, the Magic are the worst team in the NBA. Or they're in the nexus of hell with the unwatchables, the Knicks, the Bulls, the Suns, and the Cavs.
But I love the Hawks are no longer an unwatchable.
Yeah, as I said it last week, if you told the Hawks brass there are going to be four teams that are like significantly worse than you, like significantly, like you're not even going to sniff the conversation to get
and
into.
And by the way, one of them's not going to be the Kings.
Yeah.
They would have thought you were greater.
So take all that. What's interesting to you about the Magic of all I just said?
Just they really, in answering all the questions you posed, they really have to answer who they're committed to going forward. And this has sort of been the riddle in Orlando for a long time, which is, who's really good here? Who are we going to build around? Who's going to reveal himself as just sort of a tentpole player here? And of course, the irony is there's been one, which is Vucevic, who's now on an expiring deal and is your best trade asset. And, you know, they've committed to the front court so heavily. You know, they're kind of like Sacramento East here, right? I mean, you've got this existing, and Gordon is a four, and I don't know why he was ever perceived as anything other than that. You could even argue that there are nights where he's a five. That's probably stretching it a little bit, no pun intended. You know, do you like Bamba? Do you like Isaac? By all accounts, you know, you've expressed that in your personnel decisions. But if that's the case, that's the case. You know, Gordon, I mean, they've got four guys under the age of 30 who project to be really either serviceable or very good bigs in this league, depending on your evaluation. It's just like it's loaded up. I'm with you on Ross. I think the notion of the sniper from the perimeter who can, you know, give you some depth in the playoffs probably isn't as valuable an asset now as it was. I mean, you know, there was a little run on Korver, but the idea that you're going to get really great stuff in return for that guy.
There's also, by the way, I'm glad you said the P word, because there are a lot of people around the league who would view Ross as like, looks good in the regular season. What's he going to do in the playoffs when he's got to guard elite players or really good players every second he's on the floor, and teams are going to be ready for him? And also, he's shooting 38% from three this year. He shot 32 last year. And 36. So, yeah, I think 37 is not out of line. But, like, you know,
right.
do we trust him in the playoffs, I think, is a question you hear a lot about him.
Right. This is not a guy who's 39, 40, and 41. It's mid to upper 30s. He's not a 40-degree day. He's a below 40-degree day.
Love it.
And
love it.
So, I, you know, and that's what's interesting. But it is a real leap. Gordon is interesting. I love those. That was like the Al-Farouq Aminu deal, obviously on a much lesser scale, the kind of the decreasing salary over time. It's really interesting. I wonder if we'll see a lot of those this summer with the notion that, hey, take our space now, but don't eat it up later, if we'll see more of those deals. I'm also curious, like, talk to agents, and do you like that for your client? Does the factors of inflation play in? I mean, it's weird to get a pay cut, you know? But is there a demand? I mean, that's a lot of commitment to Gordon. Or does it become one of those guys we spoke to vis-a-vis Sacramento, where, hey, you're not in play for a big-time free agent, but guess what? You can acquire one this way, lock them in, and maybe a player you might not have access to otherwise. And but I don't know. I don't. Are there teams out there hankering for Aaron Gordon? I keep asking that question. I'm not getting a lot of affirmatives. And I don't think it's because they don't like the player. I just don't think he's in the imagination. I mean, of kind of teams as they build out.
You know, I mentioned Aaron Gordon, I think, should be in teams' imagination because he's in my imagination a lot. And what you get back is, well, okay, say you put him in the role that everybody wants him in, which is Draymond Green light, which is you're our screen setting four with maybe a spacing five, and you can make plays in that sort of in-between space that Draymond is so good at when you get the ball on the pick and roll and defend every position and do all this. Like, so the question comes back, okay, is he really that good of a playmaker? Like, what proof do we have of that other than a month or
That's
so?
My question.
Right. Is he a good enough shooter where you care about him on the perimeter? Obviously, Draymond is not, but Draymond is such a genius and such a brilliant screen setter, passer, all of that, that he works around it. Is he a good enough defender? Does he care enough? Does he care enough to excel in that stopper role at every position? Or does he still want to be Paul George? Does he still want to be LeBron? Like, can we get past that and make him what he's destined to be in the NBA? And even if you get there, is he good enough at all those things that he really moves the needle? I would still take a shot on the answer to that question being yes. I think teams with a hole at the 4 or 3.5, but mostly the 4, should absolutely be looking at him. I mentioned a bunch in my column on Friday. I mentioned, like, could you, like, Indiana. Indiana was rumored to give him an offer sheet. I don't believe that ever happened last summer. But that's, you know, Utah. I don't think he's a Utah kind of player. I don't think he's a Portland kind of player. I would still look at him if I were Portland. Gordon, John Collins would have a hell of a lot of fun in Atlanta. What a bold stroke that would be. One team I didn't mention in the column, and I regretted it when I was thinking over the weekend, and I think they're an interesting trade deadline team, even though I don't think they'll do anything big, is there's been all this buzz about Brooklyn lately. Brooklyn's had a great season. Two really good point guards. Pretty well stocked on the wing. You know, Joe Harris is starting to, once LeVert comes back, I think they have enough guys on the wing that they trust as long-term pieces. Have a great starting center. Not a great starting center, a good young starting center. Jared Allen is what I should say. The good, intriguing young, like a guy they like at the 5 going forward. At the 4, they're cycling through all of these things. Spacing for Jared Dudley. Damari Carroll can slide there. Kurucs is kind of starting there right now. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson was the starter, got hurt. They're not really I don't think they want to go forward with a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Jared Allen 4 or 5 because there's just not enough shooting. That's not the way they want to play. So the 4 is like this giant question mark. And then you just like, boy, Aaron Gordon would be really fun answer in that giant question mark. I think they like Aaron Gordon. The Magic need a point guard. Unfortunately, Dinwiddie is not tradable for 6 months until 6 months after the date in which he signed his extension. Boy, if Dinwiddie were tradable, Dinwiddie plus Damari Carroll salary plus the Denver pick or plus an unprotected Nets pick, I don't think you get both. Maybe for Gordon, or maybe you do throw in both because Denver's pick is going to be 28 or whatever. That's an interesting trade. Now you could come back to me and say, well, why not D'Angelo Russell? And I get it. You got Dinwiddie under contract. The team has typically not played well with both on the floor, although that began to change until Dinwiddie's injury. Boy, I don't know if the Nets
told me that Aaron Gordon would become a 37% three-point shooter or better, if you told me that he is completely comfortable playing systematized basketball, like, hey, dude, you don't know where your shot's going to be coming from, and it's certainly not going to come from you pounding it on the wing and taking whatever mismatch you perceive one-on-one. I mean, that's just not how we play here. And you got 87% buy-in from Aaron Gordon 87% of the time. Like, I'm cool with it. And actually, I really like it next to Allen. I love Allen. And I'm cool with it. I think that those are the contingencies for me with Gordon. I think he's got the tools to be a great defender and the athleticism, obviously. I'd be lying to you if I said I've seen it. Have you seen it?
Seen it in stretches, not consistently okay. enough. Not consistently enough. But I think he's already a good defender. Good. Great is the gap between good and great is what you pay the max salaries for. And that's it. I mean, I don't see the Nets doing this, to be clear. This is not, there's no buzz about this. I'm just making this up as a fake trade. The Russell thing, I just don't think a team that has come from the depths of NBA hell and has snagged him in what now looks like a genius opportunistic trade, groomed him and he's pushed him to put the work into an all-star. Your almost homegrown all-star. I just don't think you can deal with the political. I just don't think they're ready to have the political or fan fallout of almost making the equivalent of like the Michael Carter Williams trade when the Sixers trade the rookie of the year and they just don't care. Like, we don't care what the fan reaction is going to be. I don't think the Nets are in that kind of place. But I just, to me, Aaron Gordon to the Nets is just an interesting fake thing. With Orlando kind of in the trade deadline crosshairs. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, man. We got to buckle up. It's going to be interesting 72 hours. I can't wait till it's over. I have my beer. I have my post-trade deadline beer in my fridge waiting, looking at me, winking at me, saying, just wait. 10 p.m. after the trade deadline, it'll all be over. Maybe you've written a column by then. You've already watched a game that it's winking at me. Every time I open the fridge, it like smiles at me. It's there.
I just love the fact that you're practicing abstinence until then. That's just kind of fun.
Well, I mean, once we got to 9:45 p.m. last night, I felt pretty confident we're not going to have a trade, and I'm gonna flip on. The Super Bowl was already on in the background. But I'm gonna put my phone down. I'm gonna open a beer, and that. So I had I can't claim complete abstinence, but that one is winking at me and it's waiting for me. All right, I have to vacate the studio because we have another podcast coming here. Kevin Arnovitz, it is just always such a pleasure to talk to you. Almost nobody, if not anybody, knows this league as well as you do. It's just a joy to talk to you. Thank you for coming on.
Sir, thank you for having me.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.